Tired of trying diet after diet without results? Mochi Health offers a long-term weight loss solution personalized to your needs. Our board-certified obesity doctors and registered dietitians provide expert guidance to help you succeed. Eligible patients can access custom-formulated GLP-1 medication at an affordable set price delivered monthly. Take our free quiz at joinmochi.com and use code AUDIO40 for $40 off your first month. That's joinmochi.com.
Race of My Life, presented by Autosport.
When the drive shaft snapped, I thought, that's the race over. And then there was Jacques Lafitte's massive accident. Fortunately for me, the organisers decided to make it a complete new race, which let Williams swap cars. Looking back now, that was a real challenge. I had to get used to a car that was set up differently and not to my liking. The turning wasn't how I had mine set up, and the balance wasn't the same. And the spare had been difficult all weekend. But that's what I had. We had no time to change anything, not even the pedals. I gave it a lap or two to get used to it, and Gerhard Berger got ahead of me. But I passed him on the third lap, and then just got stuck in chasing after Nelson. Those are the words of Nigel Mansell describing the incident that led to his famous win in the 1986 British Grand Prix, which he selected as his race of my life to Autosport in 2009. And that choice is the latest in our Race of My Life mini-series. I'm your host, Alex Kalanorkas, Autosport's Grand Prix editor, and with me again is Autosport's chief editor, Kevin Turner. How are you, Kev?
Yeah, very good, thank you. Yeah, enjoying these Race of My Lives and going over all these mega past races.
Very good. Well, I'm going to spoil things. I'm going to spoil the order a little bit for the listeners, but I think you're ready to get quite combatty and disagreeing with the driver in question in this
one.
Yeah,
this is a good one. We can have a good debate about this, I reckon.
Excellent. So, as Nigel Mansell's quote suggested there, the race, it really hinged on the start because obviously he got going, had the drive shaft issue, and then it was the accident that meant he could come back and produce the drive that he's picked as the race of his life. But yeah, can you just talk us briefly through what happens with the accident and also Mansell's drive shaft?
Yeah, so, I mean, as he says, really, so his car broke basically at the start, and that would have been game over, except, Lafitte was involved, sort of shoved out to the right-hand side at Brands Hatch on the run down to paddock and had a very nasty impact, head-on impact, which effectively ended his F1 career. Obviously he did race again, really horrible accident actually, but it basically made that null and void, and that was what allowed Mansell to then jump into teammate Nelson Piquet's spare car, which I think contributes a lot to why he picked this race, because I think it's well known that Piquet and Mansell didn't get on. And I think that there's probably Mansell rather likes the idea of jumping into Nelson's car and then beating Nelson in the race.
Absolutely. Now, am I right? I did a bit of reading up on the race ahead of this recording. Was it that Jonathan Palmer gives Lafitte some assistance? Because obviously he's a qualified medical doctor. Is that right?
I don't recall that, but that sounds quite possible. Yes,
certainly feasible. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. No. It was quite a horrible accident. He was quite badly injured, I think.
Well, we've dealt with the unpleasantness of the race there. So let's get on to the resumed action. It's quite a dominant performance for Williams at Brands Hatch in 86. They lapped the entire field, including Alain Prost, who's third in for McLaren. Obviously, that is champion ultimately. That's why I'm sort of already on your side of thinking this can't be Mansell's or we couldn't consider this to be Mansell's greatest race because of the sheer domination at the front. Now, okay, yeah, I get that. You know, you can have really great races where there are only two cars involved and absolutely no overtaking, and that's not the case in this race. I can see his point of view. I'm already inclined to be thinking he's sort of only really saying this because he's got one over, as it were, on Piquet, as because he's in the spare car. So, yeah, I mean, what about the performance of the Williams on the day? They're just on another level.
Yeah, this is during a run of races where the Williamses are untouchable, really. So the week before, Mansell had won the French Grand Prix. And then the following race in Germany, Piquet won. He then won in Hungary. So you're in the middle of a four-race winning spree for Williams Honda, really, where they were really turning the screw on everyone else. And that, I suppose, is where Prost was really just maximising what he had. So yeah, third place was the best he could hope for. You're never going to, you're not going to make the difference of a lap up on other cars. So they were that was the car to have. I mean, I think probably that doesn't necessarily exclude it from being included in a debate like this. I mean, we talked about Alain Prost races, and one of the ones we talked about was the 1988 French Grand Prix.
Absolutely.
On the basis that obviously he beat Senna in a straight fight in the same car. And if you're up against another great, it almost doesn't, in the same car, it almost doesn't matter if the rest of the field vanishes.
Which also did sort of happen. It was a very high rate of attrition. There's only nine classified finishers for this race. So still a fair amount going on. It was just all happening behind the Williamses.
Yes, well, reliability from the early, well, but by then you're towards the latter end of the turbo era. But the first turbo era, there's some pretty spectacular mechanical failures. Which some people think that we'd like to see in current F1. I'm not sure. I guess a bit of randomness is good, but I always got frustrated if the driver in the lead or someone was on for a really good position and done a great job suddenly lost it just because the car broke. I never found that particularly appealing.
I agree with that. I think what people are yearning for is the randomness as opposed to the same people winning all the time, because I think that actually the fact that the current cars are so bulletproof is pretty remarkable when you think about it. Like, it wasn't that long ago that, as you say, there were all these regular failures. So, you know, they've been told to make these engines and these parts last for longer, and they've made them more reliable, which is pretty impressive. But anyway, we're not here to talk about 2020. Not that there's a 2020 to talk about, obviously, very sadly. But back to Brands Hatch 1986. How was Mansell's charge after Piquet? Because he sort of says he only gets one opportunity to get by. So how did you rate his harrying of him?
But Brands Hatch Grand Prix circuit is a very difficult circuit to pass on with even mildly quick single seaters. Anyone that's watched a Formula 3 or a Formula Renault race around there will know that it's pretty tough.
I enjoyed BRDC Formula 4 Will Palmer cleaning up 2015. There was no passing there.
Yeah, I mean,
on either the Brands Hatch or the Indies, on the Grand Prix or the Indy circuit for those races.
Yeah, it's pretty challenging to overtake. So Mansell obviously manages to overcome the sort of what he regards as the sort of setup deficiency that he's got. Catches Piquet, and Piquet misses a gear basically in the days where you could do that. He missed a gear and Mansell got a run and went past him. So if you watch the race, it's not the most spectacular pass of Mansell's career, but it meant a lot to him, and he was miles quicker on the day. You know, Nelson sort of held on to him. Yeah, the winning margin at the end was only 5.5 seconds. It was quite a close fight, and Piquet, I guess, made one more mistake than Mansell.
And what was his reaction? What was Piquet's reaction to being defeated in the spare car and having missed a gear?
I'm sure he kept his real feelings to himself. I mean, Piquet was a worker in terms of getting the car right. And there were races during their time together, particularly in 86, not so much in 87 after he had his big San Marino crash. But there were days where Piquet got the upper hand over Mansell by being sort of cleverer on setup and finding a tweak that he then didn't tell Mansell about. So I imagine that privately he was pretty miffed about. I think also he had chances to come back, and Mansell was quite robust. So I think already by then their relationship was not very good.
Absolutely. Well, let's hear what Mansell's thoughts post race, and then we'll explain why we're already feeling a bit of a downer on Brands 86, because there's much more exciting drives that Mansell could have picked. It was a great technical race. There were a lot of cars to pass, so you needed to stay focused. It was very satisfying jumping into someone else's car that's not set up for you and beating them. The crowd was phenomenal. They always were in Britain. The thing is, you build momentum. Winning the 1985 European Grand Prix at Brands, then the 1986 British Grand Prix, at the same circuit obviously, and at Silverstone 87, doing the triple at home was very special. So, Kev, we've covered Nigel Mansell's pick for his race of my life. But the alternatives, should we start with probably the most obvious one, which is the 1989 Hungarian Grand Prix, where Mansell goes from 12th to win in a Ferrari?
Yes. Yeah, so, yeah, the car wasn't working in qualifying. And I think Mansell worked quite hard to get a front wing change that he wanted. And as was not super unusual at the time, the Ferrari was a much better race car than a qualifying car. But it was the Hungaro Ring, which anyone will know. Well, if you look at the following year's race, Thierry Boutsen wins despite having Ayrton Senna and a McLaren Honda behind him for most of the race. So that gives you an idea of how difficult it is to is to overtake. And yeah, Mansell just charges through the field, overtakes people, obviously usually into the first corner. That's the favoured passing place. But then the thing that puts the icing on the cake, of course, is when he passes Ayrton Senna for the lead.
And which it's is not at that corner, is it?
Which is not at that corner. It's coming out of the fast downhill right-hander onto the sort of mini back straight. I suppose what you call it, turn. It's the third proper corner, really. Mm-hmm. And Senna's just unfortunate enough to come up. I think it was Stephanie Hansen's Onyx.
In the Onyx, yes.
Yeah. And he just catches him just slightly too early and has to have a minor lift. And, Mansell goes three wide and sweeps through into the lead and then disappears down the road. So I think on the day, he had, the car was just hooked up, and it was one of those where, Mansell was in the zone he wasn't going to be beaten, really.
Absolutely. And again, it's sort of, we've already discussed Alain Prost's 1990 Mexican Grand Prix, similar charge. As you say, this is the era where the Ferrari was a better race car than in qualifying, although, Prost obviously said he spent time working to set up the car for the race rather than qualifying. But again, that he picked that race because of the charge. He could have picked his title win in 86 over Mansell and Piquet, but he picked that race because he liked... He appreciated the fact that he'd done something pretty remarkable in a close race. And Mansell could have done the same. He has the same opportunity here. And as you say, the Hungaroring, I think that's a much harder place to pass even back then than the Mexico City track. So it's kind of disappointing that I think Mansell didn't pick this one.
Well, it'd be interesting to revisit it with him. That's something we'd like to do if we get the opportunity, because there have definitely been drivers that have changed their minds backwards and forwards. I mean, the two that come to mind, I know that Derek Bell at different points has picked out two different races for his Race of My Life. Sterling Moss did as well. I'm sure I've seen pieces where he picked out both the 1955 Mille Miglia and the 1961 Monaco Grand Prix. So it may well be that on a different day, in a different mood, Mansell might well pick a different race. But I guess, to be fair about the 86 race, as well as beating his teammate in the spare car, it was in front of his home crowd. It was his first British Grand Prix win, as opposed to his first Grand Prix win in Britain. Might have had a bit of an emotional thing there. But certainly, I remember watching Hungary 89. It was just, it was just the most incredible race, really. And obviously, that was also at a time when you were so used to seeing McLaren winning. Whether it's Prost or Senna, it was, the fight between them was great, but it was quite... If you wanted anyone else to win, it was quite frustrating. And so to have, the sort of the British driver in the red Ferrari coming through the field and then chasing down Senna, it was a great, for a young fan, as I was then, it was a great dramatic race to watch.
Which possibly explains why the 2019 German Grand Prix rates so highly in polls of great races of the current century, even though it was a great race. It's just there were others that... would probably trump it. And by the way, if anybody's wondering, it's Nigel Mansell, he should be allowed to pick whatever race he wants, or drivers to have two choices. Well, that's not the game. That's not what they need to pick one race, and that's what we're here to debate. So if you're just wondering why we're being so militant on this, perhaps. Another option he could have picked, the 1987 British Grand Prix. As you say, Kev, he wins again the following year for the British Grand Prix, this time at Silverstone, and it is again an utter domination from Williams. They lap the field again, but it's the pass into Stowe, isn't it, that I think caps this drive.
Yeah, and it's also, well, it's much more famous as well because of the charge. He's actually struggling in the early stages of the race and comes in to change tyres. I think there was a wheel balance wasn't quite right. And then he throws caution to the wind and goes after Piquet. I think Nelson would argue that Mansell was a bit lucky on that in that race because... the fuel readout. So you're in the, you've got to look after your fuel allocation. And Mansell got into that zone where he's like, well, I'm going after it and to hell with the numbers and I'm going to hope that it hangs together. And of course it did on that day, whereas Piquet was Pico was playing the numbers game, which is ultimately one of the reasons why he won the World Championship that year. But yeah, it's a great charge. He smashes the lap record time after time, catches Pico, and then, as you say, it is, it's got to be one of the great... that's the moment he invents the Mansell dummy, isn't he? Isn't it? So, yeah, he jinks slightly to the left on the run down, hangs straight to Stowe, and then dives to the right. And every time you watch it, it's amazing how late PK realises. Like, they do very nearly bang wheels because Nelson starts to turn in, and Mansell's just there, and he's obviously completely taken by surprise. And there's just no way he's going to get him back. It's, you know, it's good night, really. So that's a great charge, and another defeat of PK, which I thought that Mansell might have picked over that. But I guess that was in his own car, so perhaps it didn't score as the challenge wasn't quite as great as it had been at Brands the year before.
Absolutely. But you raised an interesting point there about the fuel meter, because for researching a lot of these podcasts and just thinking about alternative choices, it comes up quite a lot. So Prost at the French Grand Prix that we discussed the other day, that, you know, that both McLaren cars reportedly they were concerned that the guys were, that Senna and Prost were pushing each other so hard that they were going to run out of fuel. Obviously, we've got this here later on. There's Niki Lauda. There's instances of him where he doesn't know if he's going to make the race because of fuel. So maybe for the next regulation change, they should just stop telling the drivers what amount of fuel they've got. Let them figure it out by themselves.
I think it's an interesting point because a lot of people seem to have this impression. Because obviously, Formula One's been criticised a lot in recent years for drivers having to, well, usually look after the tyres and or the fuel allocation as though it's some kind of new, hideous, modern invention. Whereas actually, for most of F1's history, the drivers have either had to be looking after the engines, the gearboxes, the tyres or the fuel. It's actually only a very brief period in history around the late 90s, early 2000s, where it's been a flat-out blast. Most of the time, I think there has been a lot of car management going on. And I think that's part of the skill. I think that's an added element to it. You know, the best drivers still win. Usually the more variables and challenges you throw at the drivers, the more likely you are to get the best drivers winning. You know, there's a reason that, you know, Prost was good at fuel allocation. Lewis Hamilton is good at tyres, looking after the tyres. You know, the good drivers are good at the whole game. But that's a bit of an aside, but worth picking up on the fuel allocation. But yeah, am I all right to throw in a couple of other sort of honourable mentions, or have you got a couple that you'd like to?
You sure are. Well, I mean, you sent me a preview list, if we give the listeners a peek behind the curtain, and there's one category of your alternative Mansell races that are just listed definites. I mean, I know this is for your list of his greatest races, but I enjoyed that you put that little note on there. But no, please, fire away. What else could Mansell pick?
So a couple of other races I think it's worth mentioning. Yeah, so the 1992 British Grand Prix, just absolute domination, 3 seconds out at the end of the first lap, despite a poor start. So your peak Nigel Mansell there with Williams FW14B. And I know he had a huge car advantage most of the season, but I think Mansell at Silverstone in that car would have taken... I don't think Ayrton Senna or Alain Prost or anyone else would have beaten him in that car on that day. But one that tends to get forgotten is the 1992 Spanish Grand Prix. Mm. Mansell's not generally regarded as a sort of a wet weather expert, but actually he was pretty good in the wet. And that was a good example. He's gets the lead, and he has Marcus Schumacher closing in, the rising star Marcus Schumacher closing in quite a lot in sort of the middle portion of the race. And I think he gets down to within a handful of seconds. Mansell just lets him come, and then just unleashes a complete extra level of pace and drives away again. And I think that's someone who by then was comfortable enough and confident enough and experienced enough to know they didn't have to panic, could see how the race is going to develop. This guy comes out of the woodwork to challenge him, and then he just completely annihilates Schumacher in the wet, which, as history would go on to show, not a very easy thing to do.
No.
Admittedly, yeah, again, he had a car advantage, but I think that is a race, a wet weather race of Mansell's that tends to be forgotten. And the one other one that I think throw in that's worth talking about is, of course, his debut in the IndyCar Championship, when he obviously left Formula One the first time at the end of 1992. When Williams signed Alain Prost, and Mansell and Williams couldn't agree terms. Mansell went to Newman Haas, and there were some quite bullish comments from some of the IndyCar crowd, in particular Paul Tracy, who never used to miss an opportunity to say something outrageous, and said something along the lines, "We're going to teach this guy how to drive." And of course, Mansell rocks up for the first race at Surfers Paradise and sticks it on pole and wins the race. So just from a sheer multi-discipline, going from being F1 champion straight into starting a successful IndyCar campaign, it was pretty cool. And of course, he almost won the Indy 500 with a bit more experience with yellow flags. He got jumped at a restart, but he wasn't far away from winning the Indy 500 on his rookie outing, which would have been pretty remarkable as well.
Absolutely, yeah. I think you can't. That's good versatility. Good examples. And we are going to come on later in the series to talk about not just F1. You know, there will be other categories, other drivers, other races to discuss. But yeah, that's Nigel Mansell's pick. How are we going to solve the "we don't agree with him" issue?
I would say that if you put the sort of, you take the emotion of beating probably his least favourite rival in his own car out of it, you know, he required the restart for luck. He required Piquet to miss a gear to get the lead. There was no one else to worry about. I would say I would place the 1989 Hungarian Grand Prix above the 1986 British Grand Prix. If it were up to me, obviously, Nigel, he was the one in the cockpit doing the hard bit. But from the outsider's perspective, looking at the number of cars he had to overtake and just the move on Senna as well, you know, overtaking Senna for the win, I just think that's just a cooler event and probably a better drive in terms of it was a relentless having to overtake lots of cars at a difficult track.
Absolutely. Well, the very, very, very minor levels of power that come with being a podcast host mean I agree with you. We're going to overrule Nigel Mansell there. And if you disagree, Nigel, which I'm sure you're listening, feel free to get in touch and we can perhaps discuss why you haven't picked Hungary.
Well, it would be great to have the opportunity to do more podcasts and interviews with some of these drivers. If we infuriate them sufficiently, maybe absolutely, they'll get in touch.
Absolutely. Well, yes, thank you very much, Kev. Thank you to everyone for listening. If you're enjoying this series, do get in touch with us on social media, on all our channels, using the handle @autosport. Share this with anyone who might enjoy it. Thanks again for listening, and thanks to our editor Martin Lee for editing this episode.